Welcome to a new episode of PMCA Research Chat. I'm your host and PMCA Research Committee Chair, Eric Schmoyer from Barry-Calvo. Our objective is to inform and educate our listeners on current and previous Research Committee-funded topics and personalities. Please subscribe and like us on your podcast service. Check us out at PMCA.com, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Joining me today is Dr. Silvana Martini. Silvana is professor in the Department of Nutrition, Dietetics, and Food Science at Utah State University. She is active in the PMCA Research Committee and the AACT Rocky Mountain Chapter. But most importantly today, she's joining us as director of the Aggie Chocolate Factory. Welcome back, Silvana.
Hi, Eric. Thank you for the introduction.
So can you tell us a little bit about the factory?
Of course, yeah. So the Aggie Chocolate Factory was created about 2 years ago. Really, it was created as a teaching tool. So a little bit of the history about why we created the chocolate factory. Back in 2004, the food science faculty here at Utah State, we were brainstorming about new courses that we could offer to recruit more food science students. We decided to offer a freshman class on chocolate science. And during that class, which I offer to teach, we cover all aspects of chocolate making, from the history of chocolate, how cocoa and chocolate consumption evolved during the years from times where the Olmecs consumed cocoa to modern times, and also how the plants are grown, everything related to the farming, environmental conditions, how they affect the growing of the cocoa tree. And then, of course, we go into the processing itself of making chocolate. We started teaching this class in 2005, and the class was basically a lot of lectures and quizzes, and I had a few invited speakers that will come from all over the country, from big multinational companies, but also smaller local chocolate companies from Utah, to show students all the different aspects of chocolate making. And, you know, at the end of the semester, we asked students, we give them a teaching evaluation or a course evaluation. And there were always quite a few comments about, you know, not having labs. We decided that it would be nice to give the students a hands-on experience, but I didn't want this to be, you know, go to the store, buy chocolate, melt it, put it in the mold, and, you know, chocolate, right? Because yeah. that's not what the course is. So we approached the Dean of the College of Agriculture and Applied Sciences here at Utah State and proposed to create a bean-to-bar facility that will be used for teaching, research, and outreach. And with the products, we could also make products to sell it to the community. So it's basically a very similar business model like a lot of universities have in dairy, right? A lot of universities, agricultural-based universities in the country have a dairy plant and they sell their cheese and the ice cream. So we just wanted to have something similar where we can use the facility for teaching the bean-to-bar process and also make our own chocolate that people will enjoy.
So how difficult was the process? I mean, I get the inception in teaching the classes, but once you go to brick and mortar, how do you convince someone in an economic environment, especially today, to spend money to get something like this up and running?
Well, you know, the justification of teaching was very strong, right? So this is a class, even though the food science program is a small program at Utah State, this is a freshman class. And we have, the first year that we taught it, we had 90 students, 9-0. And wow. We had a lot of students on the waiting list. So the second year we increased the cap to 150. And since then we've had about 130 students every year. So really the interest was very strong. And we really like the idea of having a unique facility that really not other university has, right? I mean, some universities might have some of the equipment to make chocolate bean to bar, but nobody has an entire bean to bar processing facility. So that novelty and the ability of having a facility that will help also smaller producers. Utah has one of the highest per capita producers of bean-to-bar chocolate. So, you know, trying to help smaller bean-to-bar producers in their development of new chocolates, in the improvement of their quality, or just playing around to jump from making chocolate at your home to actually having a facility. So I think those three areas, education, helping companies, and of course doing research, really draw the attention of the dean. And he was very, very supportive. He's still very supportive of the entire process and facility.
Did you get everything you wanted from, say, like, how successful were you in maintaining that original concept to the final result today?
You know, it's kind of hard because, you know, we want to make sure that we keep our mission very clear, right? And our mission is to have a facility that is used for teaching, research, and outreach that will educate consumers and companies and producers in the bean-to-bar process, right? But as you can imagine, we are a small facility and everything is handmade. So our chocolates are very expensive. They are, I wouldn't say very expensive, but they're expensive. They are not the chocolate that you buy in a grocery store, right?
No, but you're in the ballpark. I mean, I've been on the website and you know, it's what you're going to pay for a quality product that's got attention to detail.
Yeah. So it's a single origin facility, but we've had people kind of pushing us to go ahead and make, you know, buy chocolate from the bigger chocolate producing companies and just melt it and mold it and sell that for 50 cents, right? And we were, you know, I was kind of very clear that, so that's not what we want to do, right? That's not what we're here for. So really keeping that bean to bar concept and making sure that everything that we sell there ties back to the bean to bar concept, right? So for example, we have a cocoa press, which not a lot of people have. So we make our own cocoa powder and our own cocoa butter. And with that cocoa powder, we make a hot cocoa powder, right? Like a mix
for Very people nice.
Who want to consume hot cocoa. So everything that we sell ties back to that bean to bar process. So and that's what I would like to see as our mission and as our signature, right?
But I would go even further. It goes back to the education aspect as well. You know, more importantly, it's educating students on what's behind all the raw materials they're using, as well as the creation of the product itself and marketing and all that stuff.
Sure. And you know, one of the important things about this factory is that we try to get our employees are all, most of them, 95% of our employees are students, right? So the factory is composed of two sections. One is the production part and the second one is the cafe. So in the production part, we employ all food science students. So they learn not only the process of making chocolate, but also they learn things like, you know, doing SOPs and hazard plans and safety issues, right? So all these things, I think, they're very, very important for our students to learn outside the classroom, outside the courses. And of course, we pay them, right? So it's not that they do it for free. So it's really, to me, it's a very interesting concept. And of course, it's, I think the students really like it and they value that opportunity as well.
It's really cool because it's kind of holistic too. I mean, the whole picture. How big is your staff?
So we have about, in the production side, we have about probably six students working in there. Of course, they're all part-time, right? They work, you know, maybe a few hours a week. So we have a chocolate factory manager. His name is Zachary Cooper. He's a graduate from here, from Utah State. He did a master's also at Utah State. So he oversees the operation of the entire factory and the cafe. But we also have a cafe manager that really oversees, you know, the everyday operation of the cafe. And the cafe is attached to the factory. So in the cafe, we sell all products, again, related to the factory. We sell our bars, our hot cocoa mix. We have a collaboration with a local company here. We make some truffles and things like that. So, and then in the cafe, we also have, beside that, the cafe manager, we have about another five or six student employees that are the servers and the cashiers of the cafe.
Really nice. Really nice.
Yeah.
Am I going to break a fourth wall here if I ask how you source your equipment? Because, I mean, if word got out you were looking to do something like this, I could see manufacturers tripping over each other to try and get in there to showcase their what they got going on?
Yeah, so a lot of the equipment, so when we started, we had another manager that he's the one that really purchased all the equipment. Some of the equipment was new by, you know, asking people that we knew, our contacts, which sort of brand or make we should be buying. Other equipment were used, and we are recycling some of the equipment. We realized that some of the equipment we might not use. We had a few companies that have donated equipment. We were very, very, very lucky. We are waiting for a fincoder right now that is being donated by, I don't know if I can say the company, but
DTG. Sure, you're probably a member.
Yeah, DTG in England. Yeah, they are donating, and Micro Fincoder is super, super, super small. And we had a donation from Victus for a temper meter. So, and we had a few donations from Hershey's also. They donated lab benchtop winnowers and cracking machines.
Oh, that's nice. That's
yeah. Really so nice. We have a lot of friends at the factory that have helped us quite a bit. So, and we continue to try to get donations. So if anybody's interested in donating, we'll be happy to accept any donations.
All right, so I want to take you through the whole thing. So how do you source your raw materials? Do you have dedicated suppliers, or do you actually go fishing for whatever you're looking for in particular?
Yeah, so the beans, again, we started with a different manager, and he had a contact in another bean-to-bar, pretty big bean-to-bar manufacturer in the West Coast, mm-hmm. California. So we started getting the beans from the same places that they got them. And it turned out to be a very good source. So that's how we got the beans from Ecuador and Belize that we're currently carrying. And then we changed the Ghana also. We get them from the same supplier, but now we're actually collaborating with a lamb. We're going to buy beans from them. They're helping us. I don't know if you know that Olam started a new business on specialty beans. It's called 20 Degrees. And they are helping us on getting different beans and different flavor profiles from them. So we're very lucky to have them and to help us source more beans for our inventory. So
mm-hmm. That's really cool, because I would encourage anyone to check the website out. Mm-hmm. You've got an interesting variety of origins there. I mean, it's not a whole lot, but I mean, you know, it's enough that you get experience, and the flavor variety is different too.
And that's that, you know, when I tell my students, to me, it's a very interesting area, the single origin chocolate making, because you don't have to be a sensory expert to notice the differences between the beans coming from different origins, right? I mean, the beans that we choose are so different that, again, you might not be able to describe all the flavors that are in the flavor wheel that we see on websites and everything, yep. But you can definitely see that they are different. So right now we have three origins, Ecuador, Belize, and Ghana, and we are planning on releasing another bar from Dominican Republic by maybe end of April. And we're working on a chocolate from Uganda as well. So
that's an interesting one.
Yeah. So the idea is to keep going and have a wide repertoire of single origin.
Okay. So can you talk to any flavored, nuanced flavor differences in a Uganda versus, say, a Ghana?
Yeah. So we actually, last Monday, not this Monday, the Monday before, I teach a class on sensory evaluation. So we did a difference test and a peer comparison test on comparing the Maya Mountain, which is our beans from Belize, and our Ghana chocolate. And we found that, of course, the Maya was significantly different from the Ghana, and that the Maya was more fruity. So we have sensory proof that we have a statistically valid test to say that our Maya mountains are more fruity. And really, when you taste, so that the Maya, you get that fruitiness right from the beginning. It's like a wave of fruitiness in your mouth. While the Ghana starts very with very brown notes, and then towards the end,
You pick up the fruit note at the back, kind of a sour fruit. Yep.
Exactly. Yep. So it's very interesting. And our Ecuadorian one is a lot more browny with more, you know, nutty flavors or roasted flavors. So it doesn't have a lot of fruity flavors on it. So pretty interesting. The Dominican Republic is also a little bit more browny. We still haven't developed the full flavor profile of the Dominican. That's the one that we're going to release at the end of April. And the Uganda, we're just playing with the roasting profile. So we don't have a flavor profile for that one yet.
So when you do this bean to bar, you're essentially getting in fermented dried beans, and then you're literally cracking and winnowing them there, and then proceeding through the process?
Yeah. So the first thing that we do is, of course, after we freeze them, we freeze the bags for about 2 weeks to make sure everything is killed in there. And then we sort them by hand. We make sure we select good beans and we get rid of any extraneous, you know, sticks and things that we don't want, that they're not beans. And then we also select, we discard beans that are broken. I mean, we really don't discard it. We just use them to then obtain cocoa butter. We press that. Mm-hmm. So we get the really nice beans, and we roast them, we winnow them, and we grind them. We have melangers. We do our grinding and we're conching all together in a melanger, which is very common for, you know, small processing bean-to-bar facilities. And then we temper them and we mold them and we sell them. So very simple process, but very lengthy, of course, and very time consuming, but it's good.
But it's very traditional too. It's not
very traditional. Yeah.
You're and not going to be milling a ball mill to get the liquor where you need to be. I mean, you're really working it.
Yeah. And that's what I really like, because for the students, for example, right? I mean, they see all the process, right? Things that we discuss in the lecture, they see right away, right? From the sorting to, you know, they can see the cracking. They can see the winnowing, they can see every little step. So I think that's very important from the educational point of view, especially for the class that we teach every fall.
Are the factory resources available for, I don't know, consultancy might not be the right word, but do you solve problems outside of the academic experience?
Yes, definitely. We are open for any company that might want to do research together, a research project. We're actually working with a company, talking to a company about a project right now. And we have another company that's interested in doing some research on the fat behavior of chocolate. So there are still all, you know, discussions at this point. But yes, we are available for research collaborations with companies, definitely.
Crazy question from outside of left field here. You don't do any alkalization?
No, we don't. No, we don't. We could, though. It's a good idea, actually. But no, not yet.
Yeah, I always wondered, that was one of the things I always wondered, why somebody in the research and didn't do the effect of alkalization, you know, whether you're putting the agent in the conch versus alkalizing the nib prior to.
Yes.
I was always curious what the difference is in effect, if it was the same. But that's another story.
That would be a great project. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You do reference academic coursework. Can you go a bit deeper? Are you offering anything online, or is it just Utah State students at this point?
At this point, it's only Utah State students. We would definitely like to develop more, grow on that area, and develop some online classes, both for the community and for, you know, food scientists or people that are in the confectionery industry. We're working on that. You know, we're pretty new, and then COVID hit us. So we tried to survive during COVID. And right now, you know, just now we're trying to catch up the speed and work a little bit more on the short courses. So hopefully we have those available in the next year or so.
Before you get into your products, you're just doing solid bars at this point? Or you said you do ganache and truffles as well.
Well, the truffles are kind of interesting because it's a collaboration with a company. So it's a local company, very traditional company. They're called Bluebird. And they are very famous for making truffles. And here at Utah State in the food science program, we also have a creamery. And we have what we call the famous Aggie ice cream. So people are crazy about, you know, our ice cream here, and they're crazy about specific flavors of the ice cream. So we did a collaboration. We are doing a collaboration with Bluebird, and they make the centers of the truffles that are flavored after the Aggie ice cream flavors. And wow, we give them our chocolate so that they can dip them in our chocolate. So it's a, you know, Bluebird, Aggie chocolate, Aggie ice cream collaboration. So it's a, has been very well received, and it has been really good experience. So we hope we can continue with that.
You mentioned the, you serve cocoa over in the cafe as well. Are you doing any of that? Are you jumping on the chocolate bomb sensation?
On the oh no, we are not doing the chocolate balls. Not yet. I know, it has been crazy, isn't it? Yeah, no that. But other products that we sell in the factory are just pastries, you know, that people can enjoy with their hot cocoa. And all the pastries, the only condition is that they have to have our chocolate. So we have, you know, biscottis out of chocolate, chocolate chip cookies, all sort of different cookies or pastries that we can offer, you know, have to have our chocolate. So that's pretty interesting. And of course, you know, we sell the nibs and we sell beans. And we have also a local person that makes honey-based caramels, and they put our cocoa nibs in the caramel. So that's very well received as well. It's very popular as well.
Do you have any issues with the honey and the chocolate reacting at all?
Not at all. They are pretty good, actually. And not that I know. We can keep an eye on it, but I don't think we've seen anything negative about it. Yeah.
It's interesting. Very interesting. Mm-hmm. I think I touched everything. Did I miss anything? You want to talk about anything else that's going on, where they can find you, what your hours are, that kind of thing?
Yeah, well, we are online, aggiechocolate.com. We have a store online. So if you want to try us out, you can order online. If you are local, you can stop by the factory, and all the factory is visible through windows. So it's all covered by windows. So you can see the operation of the factory 24/7. And so it's pretty fun to come around. We do tours, and we do have a virtual tour as well for people that can't come here in person. We have a YouTube channel that I will share all the information later. So we have a few other videos in that YouTube channel. They're all educational videos about bean to bar processes. So yeah, check us out, and feel free to shoot me an email if you have any questions. We're all very passionate about chocolate, and I'm going to quote, if I can remember, one of our students that says, when you are buying Aggie chocolate, you're not only buying chocolate, but you're also buying a student's experience. So I really like that quote. She's very smart, and she's one of our first employees, and it's really the truth, you know.
That is great. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks so much for joining us today. It seems like such a wonderful place. Maybe in the near future I can get out there, but who knows the way things are going these days.
I know. Yeah. Well, anybody that wants to come to Utah to visit, they're very welcome. Please stop by, and we'll give you a VIP tour.
Thanks so much, Silvana.
Thank you, Eric. Thank you very much for having me.
This has been another episode of PMCA Research Chat. Please subscribe and like us on your podcast service. Check us out at PMCA.com, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn.